Hey, Danger Dan Jurz here with a quick announcement. Our next interstitial bonus content will be Daniel's Power Rangers mini campaign, and it will be the final one before the start of Season 2 officially begins. It's a soft Season 1 epilogue slash side story that will be releasing exclusively on Patreon, with its first episode dropping Wednesday, May 27th. Stick around after the episode to hear a sneak preview. More details about Season 2 will be coming soon, so keep an ear out and enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a show where I chat with other creators in the TTRPG space about how they run their tables. I'm Danger Dan Jurz, the GM and host of D&D Dark, and joining us at the table today is the GM of the Monster of the Week podcast, The Thorn Files, Danny. Hello.
Hello.
So to kick us off and get started, can you tell us a little bit about your history in the TTRPG community and about your show, The Thorn Files?
Thank you. Yes. I've always loved storytelling. I think it's something which I have done since I was as young as my memory stretches back to. I used to build Warhammer when I was very young, and I used to sort of play with toy knights and monsters and dragons and all this sort of stuff. And I'm looking back at it now in hindsight, I definitely remember I would make up stories for all these characters, and they'd be very in-depth storylines. I'd have factions and all this sort of interworking character connections going on. And so what I was doing when I was very, very young was essentially playing TTRPG Lite without any real rules, essentially just playing on my own. I was already going towards that, I think. And as I got older, I love board games, that sort of inclusion of rules, and I started to find myself making storylines, and I was in my head. Then, you know, I think I got into TTRPGs in the same way that a lot of other people do. I'm not breaking the mold when I say that I got into it probably through listening to podcasts. I initially heard of it through things like Critical Role. They are very much the one I think a lot of people got into D&D from. When I first listened to them, it was a bit overwhelming, to be honest. I didn't really know how the game works, but I came back to them a little bit later, and I definitely got more into it. And at the same time, my big sister had told me to go and listen to the Adventure Zone as well, because they had just started up their first campaign, the Balance campaign. And I think from there, I just started finding myself falling into a hole of listening to lots of different TTRPG podcasts and just loving everything about it. And around that sort of time, I started playing D&D properly myself. I really threw myself into doing it. I helped start up a D&D group in the town which I worked in, because there just was a real dearth of D&D groups in that area. And so I would go there after work, I'd play for a few hours with people, and then I would go home. And I was one of two GMs in that group because no one else wanted to. And this is my first step into D&D, was with a group of about six or seven people as the GM. And it was definitely a baptism by fire of getting into it. There's lots of stuff I did way too much.
That's a big group.
It's a bloody big group. And, you know, for my first campaign, I actually only literally finished that campaign in the last couple of months. It went on for about 5 years, probably more than that, to be honest. It was a few years before COVID, and then it extended through COVID. So it's a good long while. It was great, but it was definitely mad doing that. And while I was enjoying doing that, I also found myself, you know, I think what a lot of GMs do, especially with something like D&D, that is very adaptable, is tweaking things and making your own little mechanics and stuff. And I love doing that. And I love continuing to telling stories and doing a lot of collaborative storytelling with my players. And then I just got this sort of idea of doing a podcast. And it was just like a niggling little thought to start off with of like, I could maybe do that. I quite like audio editing, and I quite like playing TTRPGs. And maybe I could give this a go. And I think once I had that thought, I had to give it a go. It was one of those things that I couldn't not do it at that point. And so, yeah, I got into it. And a lot of the people who I played with in my home game became people in the podcast, and people who I played with outside of that home game also became part of the podcast as well. And, you know, I haven't looked back. I love the people that I've gotten in touch with and gotten to know through the TTRPG space. And it's been mad. It's been bonkers. But yeah, it's been great. And yeah, so the Thorn Files itself comes from, I think, it was listening to the Adventure Zone's, they did a season of Monster of the Week, and I loved it as well. And it started making me really think about different games I could play as well, like really, really thinking about it. And yeah, the more I read about it, it's the first TTRPG outside of D&D that when I read it, I was like, I love just reading this book. I love reading the rules of this. It is so fun. And it really lent into that sort of like storytelling as a game rather than like the crunchy numbers, which I really do love as well about D&D. And I love about Call of Cthulhu and all the other sort of crunchy number games. So if you love a crunchy number TTRPG, like all the power to you, like live your best life. But I think Monster of the Week really lent into that, you know, that storytelling, which I did from when I was tiny. So yeah, and then it was just sort of from there, everything just took off. I love Monster of the Week, and it was the only one I could really think of if it came to doing a podcast, because I just loved it so much and wanted to do a story with it. And it's also one of those things where I just wanted to play it as well. So saying, oh no, it's actually a project, it's a creative project, me doing this, meant that I could play more games, which I think was a sneaky way of me getting to play more TTRPGs.
There is something to that. For D and Dark, for example, making it into a podcast put a pressure on us to meet regularly.
Yes, definitely.
That I think is a big part of what carried us through completing our campaign.
Mm, yeah, no, I completely agree with you. That's why I think it's been the most regular game that I've played, and that has, you know, regular players have come. I don't think we've only had a few episodes here and there where people haven't been able to make it, and that's only for like really extreme things. The team's been great at making sure we can work the things, and yeah, it's been fab. And there's more that we talk about in terms of the Thorn Files itself. Choosing to do it in a historical setting was something I always wanted to do, because I thought if I did modern day, that would be interesting, but I wanted to lean into more sort of like historical settings for these sort of things, because you could lean on sort of social issues as well, which I think is important to, if you have the opportunity to tell these sorts of stories, you should. And yeah, so that's where it all came from. And, you know, also just a love of horror, a love of spookiness and mysteries, and creeping my players out every single chance I get. With every mystery, I've tried to do it at least once.
It is incredibly satisfying. There's a lot that I want to unpack about all of that, but I do want to commend you for really diving into the deep end when you were first starting, jumping in with a really big group, coming in as the GM to help establish a regular playing group. That is no small feat. So definitely want to commend you for that. And from the interviews that I've done and from a lot of the people that I've talked to, Critical Role, specifically Adventure Zone, the Balance campaign, are the two biggest starting points for most new actual play shows. For me, I got in from the Dungeons and Daddies podcast.
Yes, another really fantastic podcast as well.
Oh, yeah. And they, Anthony Birch has been very vocal about how Adventure Zone Balance was his biggest inspiration point and the thing that he was primarily pulling from in putting that campaign together. But absolutely, those actual play podcasts were a huge inflection point for people coming into the hobby and entering in. I sympathize entirely with having difficulty getting engaged with Critical Role. It is kind of impenetrable. Just the sheer amount of content that they have. It's so hard to know where to start and where to jump in. I've admittedly really struggled and not really been able to follow a lot of their stuff. I've been able to pick out like an episode here or there to kind of study and jump off of, but a lot of the stuff that they've inspired, like, it's impossible to overstate their influence over the hobby and over the space. They were such a big magnetic draw to pull people into the community. So to further unpack, and I really want to dive more into your show, but for anyone who is unfamiliar with the Monster of the Week system, can you explain and lay down a basic groundwork for what are the general basic rules of it and how does the system work?
So yes, I'll try to break it down as sort of as succinctly as I can. Monster of the Week is a game based around the Powered by the Apocalypse system. It's designed to emulate a sort of episodic monster hunting like TV shows. So you think like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Supernatural, there's a few other ones that will, X-Files. The more you think about them, the more that fall into it. Each player in the game takes on a sort of a hunter role. So archetypal characters you'll find in these sorts of stories, about the cold archetypes and playbooks. So you have things like the Chosen. So you think like Buffy the Vampire Slayer is the Chosen one. You have characters like a Spooky, who are like particularly scary characters. They're archetypal characters. And together, you investigate and confront some like supernatural threats. Maybe aliens, different dimensional monsters, or in Thornfire's case, like sort of fey folk and things from folklore. It's a very rules-light, narrative-forward game. Now, what I really love about the game is the degrees of success and failure, right? So if you roll above 10, that's like a full success. So you get whatever you want, and also the keeper, the person who's running the game, will give, maybe give you something a little bit extra as well. Then between 7 and 9, it's called a mixed success. So you'll get potentially what you want, but you won't get everything you want. And things might go maybe a little bit wrong as well. And anything below a 7 is a failure. But instead of what you're doing just completely like stopping and halting, the keeper has to use it as a sort of means to push the story forward, but in a way that is chaotic in some way, that things go badly. So it can't just be, oh, well, you're trying to break into a door and the lockpick you're using breaks. It could be now something really bad happens, you're trying to do this, and now maybe you've alerted everyone nearby, and or you've set an alarm off, and something bigger is going to go on now. So it encourages the GM to include these extra bits. And it's great because it just allows us sort of collaborative storytelling throughout. So character arcs allows for improvisation, and it really encourages improvisation as well. And what's really fab about it as well is that whenever you fail a role, that's how you gain experience in the game. So it's not based on successes. You do get some from successes based on if you finish a mystery or you save people during like an episode, during a session, you might get some more experience in that, but not really that much. But what you do get loads of experience from is from those failures. So you never feel like you failing a role has ruined your game, because your character will get better and be less likely to fail later. So yeah, it really, really works. And it's just a deeply, deeply fun game to play, and very chaotic if you have the right group, which I definitely do for Thornfires.
I love the philosophy behind having no failure ever be wasted. The tying experience points to failed roles is a really clever way to incentivize riskier gameplay.
Oh, really is. And it's also, you know, narratively, it makes sense, right? Right? Like, you roll shit and you get beaten up this time. But next time, because you failed that time, you gain some experience. So potentially, you might not fail next time because you have learned from that, right? It's like learning from mistakes.
Exactly. And that's how life works. You tend to learn a lot more from failure than you do from success. So it's really cool that that's mechanically represented within the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
So to unpack and tie this a bit more into the Thornfire, so using the Monster of the Week system and taking it into a historical setting, it's definitely something that I'm really interested in as I'm gearing up for our second season. Our first season was, even though it was technically set in a fictionalized version of the real world, much more whimsical and fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going for slightly more of a historical route for our second season.
Oh, right.
So I definitely want to pick your brain about what all was going through your mind in the setup.
Great question. So I think Monster of the Week really works because it's a system which is based on a style of TV show that has had lots of different TV shows based in different settings, right? That's like lots of them are very much real world based, but with sort of fantastical elements. But there are others which aren't. I think you could argue something like Doctor Who is a Monster of the Week TV show.
Absolutely.
I could absolutely. So the more you think about it, like, oh yeah, follows exactly the same structure as all those other ones. I think something like Monster of the Week, which, like I said, is very sort of rules light in the sort of sense that it allows you to very much adapt things very easily. It works to put it into different time zones as well. It really, really works. Because it's so rules-light, you don't feel like you're tied to any specific setting with it. When it came to like coming up with the setting and thinking about the setting, I knew I was always going to do historical because I think it's important to do historical settings. I think they can be very interesting. I think they leans into and allows for a lot of emotional storytelling and character-driven plots based around things which are, you know, things in the past, but things which are very much relatable today. We have players, we have plots and characters that are very much sort of centered around lots of different things that are very much relevant to today. But it's interesting putting them in a historical setting because I think it allows people to look at them as a outside and within sort of thing, if that makes sense. Being able to have this sort of wonderfully flexible system meant that I could plunge myself into a historical setting, and I don't think I'd get caught out on things too much. So I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought, if I'm being honest. So talking about it.
No worries. It's kind of an abstract question and train of thought. So it might be helpful to go into more specifics of the specific time era that you are set in and what kinds of social things you're pulling from. So your first season is set, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's set in the 1950s?
Yes, 1952 for season one.
Coming out of World War II in the post-war era, I'm sure that that really heavily influenced a lot of what the changing social dynamics were and gave you a lot to really pull from. So in the juggling act of balancing the fantastical elements of the Monster of the Week system and doing a more horror-centric story with a historical setting, what kinds of considerations did you make in trying to kind of thread the needle in approaching both of those aspects?
I think it's important that we did try to connect things in a certain way and have some running themes throughout. So at that time, there was so much sort of displacement of people, not just in terms of like physically, like people's homes were destroyed, people's whole lives were destroyed, people had to, were forced to go from whole other countries, they were moved to other places in the world. So that theme of sort of displacement and feeling lost and alone while being surrounded by people was something that we definitely wanted to use. And then, you know, we have Mikhail's character in the first season, Peter. He's a gay character. We had talked about it. We talked about the fact that we wanted to have social issues play a part in our game and talk about them a lot. And I think it was important for us that we had a character from the LGBTQ plus community in the story because it was, and you know, it continues to be, but it was especially then like a really, really horrible time to be part of that community. Like you've just come out of World War II and obviously the atrocities that happened, countless people. But it was this strange world where, you know, and looking back in the history of it now, it just baffles me that we beat the bad guys, right? Like the Nazis were the bad guys in World War II. And we knew they were bad guys now, in hindsight, because of all the horrible things that they did to people and all the minorities that were destroyed and targeted by them. And then, you know, these people from these communities that have just gone through the absolute worst things they could possibly go through end up in places like the UK, and it's still shit for them. Like, it's not like the UK was a super inclusive, everyone's here, and it's a massive community sort of world. It was also massively secular. It was massively segregated still, and people still hid a lot about themselves, even though they're just supposed to be the good guys, right? These are supposed to be the friendly place. And I think it's that looking at it and realizing that just because people aren't necessarily obviously monsters doesn't mean that they aren't. It's just an interesting theme to play with. It definitely influenced a lot of the things that we did in the first season. And we have lots of characters who are displaced characters who come from communities that we are either hiding part of themselves or literally are being persecuted in the series in some way. We have a lot of the themes in terms of like the monsters as well, this idea of monsters hiding, this idea of a lot of the monsters in the first season, especially even the main antagonists of the first season, are monsters that have been forced out of where they came from and are sort of stuck in our world and have had this one glimpse of potential hope. And they sort of come into this world looking for something better. Things go badly for them. We also had this thing which made a sort of a rule for our world going into it, that magic is done best in our world when it's done by humans. So you have monsters do it, and you have creatures come to the world and perform magic, but the worst things that can happen in the world due to magic are done because humans do it, and because humans are greedy, because humans are flawed, and even the best people can do evil things. And it was a time of huge amount of doubt, a huge amount of fear, and it just plays into the idea of horror perfectly, because everything's terrifying. People are terrifying. So the monsters that we had in that season all definitely played into the sort of things you would see, like greed and anger and the want for revenge, and all these things would boil up in people constantly. It's pretty heavy.
I think it's a really good way of tying together the things that this genre of entertainment does really well, like the air of secrecy and the huge emphasis on identity and kind of the split between public and private life.
Yeah.
Is such a huge focal point with all the TV shows that this TTRPG is kind of built on the backs of. I love the diaspora aspect of it, of the monsters being displaced, especially in such a turbulent time, and the amount of unsteadiness that just kind of existed in the world in the wake of such an enormous cataclysm. So I think it's a really fascinating way to approach this system. Pulling off of those identity aspects of the shows that go into this, are there any particular touch points that you were looking at when building that story, whether it was from any of those TV shows, whether it was from jumping into the history books? Like, what were your particular inspirations for building this story in this setting, and what did you look to when making the Thorn Files?
Yeah, there were a few things. Obviously, there's the Monster of the Week TV shows we've previously talked about, definitely had a play on what we've looked at, but also there's a TV show in the UK that I don't know how popular. I imagine it would be popular. It's a pretty good TV show called Life on Mars. You wouldn't watch it and think, ah, yes, Thorn Files watching this. But I definitely took inspiration from it, because it is a essentially how it works is a police officer from modern day is an accident, and then he wakes up, but it's the 1970s, I believe, and he's sort of stuck in this world which he doesn't understand, and it becomes more and more clear that he's like in a coma, and it's all part of like his mind just trying to deal with the trauma of it. And how that plays into it is, like, occasionally in this very much a surrealist police procedural, because they're all historical cases that he's aware of happen, that he sort of gets involved with and solves the cases because he knows a bit about the history of them. There are elements that are truly terrifying, right? And like really, really suddenly scary moments and really weird visuals and things happen. The storyline takes a very strange twists and turns. So I definitely would say that's something which I take inspiration from, sort of the style of it and the ability to sort of tell these interesting storylines about people and identity, especially, I mean, it's the main character is a police officer, and it's all set within the police at a time where there was the police weren't great. The police are good now necessarily, but that period of history is very, very dodgy. And there's a lot of dodgy stuff going on, especially if you're a minority or a woman.
Oh, absolutely.
It was very, very hard to be in the police at that time. And so it really leans into that, telling those sorts of stories. But then also, like, you know, having the space to do something scary as well, like suddenly something scary happens. I would say also, I want to say I take inspiration from things like Midnight Mass as well, just as like a sort of small town horror story. I know that's a modern setting, but it's definitely the vibe I take from, you know, this monster, obviously, and the monster's doing what the monster does, and it's very much sort of its instinct, and it's all built around that. But the monster can only really do what it does because the humans allow it to do it. It's made worse by the humans that are there and make it worse. I'd also say something like The Witch, is another sort of familiar sort of horror film set in a family setting. I love doing that as well. I love watching that. And it definitely gave me inspiration as well for this. It's really any horror set in a historical setting, I think, is one of those with a bit of a sort of strangeness to it. I like a strange horror film, not necessarily love a jump scare sort of movie, but I love a strange one. And I think those really lean into it. I would also say, I mean, another thing I definitely touched on in terms of the style and where I took initial inspiration from was another podcast, a show called The Magnet Archives.
I had a feeling.
In hindsight, calling the podcast The Thorn Files is so much closer to The Magnet Archives than I actually intended it to be. I really didn't mean it to be that close, but I committed to it. And then afterwards, like, bollocks is so, it sounds so similar. But I love the Magnetop Guides. I think it's such fantastic sort of storytelling through a sort of audio means as well. So I definitely take inspiration from that. That's actually, my sister as well got me into listening to that. And I do have a story where I had initially listened to it and loved it, but I just jumped into like a random episode because I'm chaotic like that. And there were so many episodes. I thought, I'll just listen to a random one that sounds fun. And so I did listen to a random one. And then my sister said that I was mad and I should go back to listen to the first one. And I did. And by this point, I was already planning the Thorn Files. And when I was planning it, I had initially thought, okay, I'm going to do like an anglerfish monster. And then like one of the first archives episode is a monster which is very, very much inspired by anglerfish. I think it's called, the episode's called Anglerfish. And it's a great podcast. It's a great inspiration for us.
You never know where inspiration will strike and will come from. The stuff that I pull from my show is all over the place, which granted, we are more comedic and we're kind of intentionally anachronistic. And since we've got a heavier focus on the show being more of a comedy, we play a little faster and looser with the genre conventions of what we're going for. But in terms of where horror is derived from, there's so many interesting things. And I find that the more that you can dodge expectations, the more effective something can be. I didn't expect at all how horrific I could make frogs going into our show.
Yep.
And as the show goes on, I lean more and more into the horror aspect of our comedy horror podcast. But it's interesting what you can get from melding together different sources. Similar to you with Magnus Archives, the Welcome to Night Vale podcast.
Yes,
such is a good one. So, an enormous inspiration point for me. And it's much more indirect with D&D Dark, but a lot of my earlier projects before doing this podcast were very Night Vale inspired. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sense of humor between Welcome to Night Vale and the Terry Pratchett Discworld books.
Yeah, there's a few novels as well. I haven't actually mentioned that. I think I should mention as well. The Discworld books have absolutely been a huge inspiration for me, not just in terms of Thorn Files, but any TTRPG I've played has been influenced by the Discworld books. When I initially started the game, I said I was talking about earlier on, I had just come off the back of reading all of the Witcher books. Essentially, I can't remember if they'd all been out by that point, but like a lot of the Witcher books. And so I was into like political stuff and kingdoms, and it's all like gritty realism, magic, and really grim, dark sort of world. And then I reread all the Discworld books, and my campaign became very whimsical. There was a lot of silliness eventually towards the end of the campaign. Certainly, I just Terry Pratchett's fantastic, and so absolutely leaning towards that in terms of inspiration. I'd also say there's a great book called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke. It's a sort of 19th century. It wasn't written in the 19th century, but it's written in that style. So if you like sort of the period piece books, it's very much written in that style. So it's really enjoyable to read. If you like Sense and Sensibility, if you like Pride and Prejudice, you'll enjoy reading it for the style of it. But it's also, it's such a great bit of storytelling because it's based on like 19th century Britain. If magic was a thing that was just commonplace, like gentlemen don't do magic, but magic, people used to do magic. There was a golden age of magic a while ago, but it's passed and people don't do magic anymore. And it's just such a rich bit of storytelling, and the world is fantastic. And doing Thorn Files, I just read that, and one of the main cruxes of it as a book is sort of like fae folk and the sort of creepy magic of the fae and this sort of otherworldly people that are sort of human but not quite human. They don't really have the same sort of empathy because they live much longer, or their lives are just sort of different in that sort of way. And I just love that sort of creepiness. And that's definitely coming into this season, the second season of Thorn Files, way more. But Terry Pratchett, Susanna Clarke, if you haven't read it, definitely go read it. I can't believe I forgot the books I've read as well.
I will absolutely add that to my list. But Terry Pratchett and Douglas Adams were incredibly instrumental in my sense of humor.
Yes.
So a lot of their sensibilities work their way into our show.
Brilliant. Yeah.
But jumping into more of the horror aspect of things, I'm just curious if you're anything like me, where after you've started doing your show, Like for me, I did some deep dives before doing the show, but as the show was going on, I was basically doing my homework, so to speak, of going through all of the horror greats, especially because when I was younger, I was very not necessarily squeamish, but I was much more horror averse when I was younger. And the turning point for me was kind of hitting high school, and in like my late teens, early 20s was when I kind of started to really get into and embrace horror. So there's a lot of work that I had to do retroactively to go back and rewatch and experience all of the things that I had been avoiding. Did you have any sort of similar experience after you've done the show of like, okay, I need to start really deep diving into all of this other horror media to see what I can pull to accentuate the show and to like really amplify the horror that we're going for?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think I was very similar to you in the sense that I can't remember really disliking horror when I was growing up. I liked it, but I would never choose to watch it. And I think I had a very vivid imagination. So there were definitely things which that stuck in my head for a very long time. And I don't want to say they traumatized me. They definitely traumatized me. And the things that they weren't always from horror films. They're just things that scared me. I remember being scared quite a lot by films. So I think in that sense, I didn't necessarily watch lots of horror films. I also, you know, had friends in my family. There was lots of brothers in this family, and lots of them are much older than me, and also my big sister as well. And they would just absolutely love putting on absolutely terrifying films and watching them with all the young kids and just terrifying us. So, I mean, we watched things like The Ring and things like that, which in retrospect, maybe not the scariest film in the world, The Ring, but as a young child, it was
absolutely
just terrifying. And things like The Haunting. It was another one which, looking back on it, if I was to watch it now, I wouldn't find it scary, I don't think, because I've watched so many other things now that I would definitely find way more terrifying. But at the time, definitely scared me and traumatized me. But yeah, I've definitely gone back to rewatch loads of stuff. There's also stuff I didn't touch when I was younger that I've got back into. And yeah, horror is a great genre. It's definitely had lulls. There have definitely been years where it's not been great. I think we're going through a bit of a peak at the moment with all the great horror films that are coming out in the last few years. But there's also a huge amount of like really great like horror short films as well. Shudder is a great place to find horror films. And I also actually got into it as well by going through, if you've listened to it or watched it, the Dead Meat, which is a podcast, but also YouTube channel that go like deep dives into horror films and so goes to the how they work. And they did like kill counts, but now they do like these sort of, like the behind the scenes stuff as well. And I find that fascinating. And it's just a great way to sort of really look at horror in a more sort of rounded way. And I think doing that has meant that I felt so much more confident going back and watching horror and just really enjoying horror films. Like, I love the Alien films. Have been fantastic.
Fantastic films. Well, some of them.
Yeah. They're tips and stuff. But then things like, I remember growing up not knowing what the film was, but being terrified by visuals. I just had stuck in my head from, like, walking in one day and my cousins were watching a film and I think they all watched this horror film. And I just had these horrible visuals in my head that stuck with me for ages. And only in the last like few years realized that what I remember watching was The Thing.
Ah.
And going back and watching it, just thinking, this is a bloody great movie. I can appreciate it's still pretty scary and the practical effects and everything, like absolutely fantastic, but it is such a good film. And yeah, I really appreciate horror. I think it's just gone the up and up as well. You have things like Sinners.
Great movie.
An amazing horror film and just like a good 100% good movie. It's taking huge steps forward. I think it's such a relief that horror is doing well because it's such a good genre. And I think, you know, you can't knock things like Get Out was, I think, got so many people into horror last few years. And then Us as well is another great one. And then you have the resurgence of things like The Twilight Zone. You had, what's his name? The guy who directed Pan's Labyrinth.
Guillermo del Toro.
He does his like a series of short films in on Netflix where he has like a Cabinet of Curiosities is what it's called. And again, it's just like short horror films. And then you have things like Love, Death, and Robots, which can lead into horror as well. They're fantastic, those short films in that as well. So I think horror's taken off and I think it's great. There are so many good examples of it coming out in the last few years.
Oh, absolutely. And with horror being just kind of in its nature a subversive genre, it really lends itself well to social commentary and to dissecting larger societal issues. So it's such a versatile genre, and there's so much that you can do with it.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
It's great to see it thrive. And a similar experience to me with what you brought up with The Thing. I remember not all that long ago, it was when I was going back and doing my horror homework, I watched Hellraiser for the first time, and I remember distinctly feeling when I was watching it, this movie is exactly the movie that 10-year-old me thought all horror movies were.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate representation of it as well. I think Hellraiser is a great film, though, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. And a thing that I've started to kind of piece together, what was a big entry point for me was from the Night Vale Network, a podcast that I love to recommend to people that they've done as a spinoff is Random Number Generator Horror Podcast Number 9, where it's Cecil from Night Vale and Jeffrey Craner, who is one of the main writers. Jeffrey knew absolutely nothing about horror, and Cecil was a major horror buff. And so the two of them decided to do a podcast where Cecil would take Jeffrey through the genre of horror and introduce him at random one movie at a time. Every episode, they roll a pair of dice, and they'll usually have like a style dice and a scare dice. So it'll be a thing of like, okay, if we roll a one, this will be a movie from the 1940s. If we roll a two, this will be a splatter film. If we roll a three, this will be a film that's in the top 15 percentile on review aggregators. If we roll a four, this will be a so bad it's good movie. Mm-hmm. We roll the other dice and like, okay, it's a vampire movie if we roll a one. It's a witch movie if we roll a two. It's a ghost movie if we roll a three, etc.
Brilliant, yeah.
So they've covered a wide range of the classics and really obscure ones that I never would have known otherwise. And they basically do a like brief summary of the movie. They give a list of warnings for if you are squeamish, these are the things to look out for. If you're curious about horror, but like want to approach it at arm's length, we'll give you just a summary of everything that happens in it and kind of discuss some of the behind the scenes and the merits of it. And then roll the dice again to see what movie we are randomly doing next week. It's a great way to explore the horror genre from the outset. Yeah. They've been going for a couple years now, so they've got a really big backlog of episodes. So it's a really good resource, and it's been a fun way to kind of discover more niche horror movies and also like to kind of vicariously with them and through their discussions, revisit and get a feel for what is my personal taste in horror. So absolutely one that I recommend. It's usually abbreviated to Random Horror 9. I will definitely check out the ones that you brought up. You said Dead Meat?
Dead Meat, yeah. They did start off with like, just like they did that kill count where they would break down the kills in a film. They'd go through them, they would mark down like the best one and the worst one in a movie. But then as the show's gone on and progressed, they have become so much more. They go into like the technicalities of how some of these kills happen in the films. They go through the sort of social issues in the films mentioned. They go through a huge amount of backstory stuff and behind the scenes stuff. And they do interviews. They do like Dead Meat Horror Awards, and they'll have like horror legends come in and present awards on it. And it's just, they're doing so much stuff. And if you're interested in getting into horror without necessarily diving straight into watching some of the films that they've covered, I think it's a good way of doing it, because they obviously definitely recommend like go watch the film for yourself so you can, you know, experience it first. But it's actually really made so many horror films so much more of like a comfortable watch for me, because I'd be like, I know how this has happened. I know how this has worked. I know this is a great film to work on, and everyone had loads of fun. And I know how these scenes were filmed and what's about to happen. So I wouldn't necessarily be shocked and scared. I could just like appreciate the horror and appreciate how the film's been made. So I think it's handy for that. I wouldn't say I do it for every single film. I think there's definitely a few which they've covered, which I haven't listened to their stuff before I've watched the movie. So things like Sinners, they did a podcast on Sinners, and they sort of broke that all down. But I watched it before. I wanted to experience it first. And things like they did like The Menu. They did a Menu one, and I wanted to watch The Menu first. So I would definitely recommend getting involved with them. They're great.
Yeah, I will absolutely check them out. They sound like a fantastic resource. Before we get too far off track, I do want to circle back around to Thorn Files. So for anyone wanting to check out your show who is coming in for the first time, brand new, what do you consider to be the best on-ramp for them? You've got a couple of seasons, and I think you've got some interstitial content that is separate from your main story. So what do you consider the best starting point for new listeners? What is the best overall representation of your show? And if they're different, then please feel free to go into what makes each kind of standout point unique.
I think I want to say, if you're going to listen to our podcast, please listen to the first episode of the first season. Obviously, I want that to be the case. But I can respect the fact that we were starting out then and we were figuring things out, how the game worked, we were playing together and we were having fun with it. I can also appreciate the quality of the audio is like we were recording through a potato. I love the first few episodes because I know how much effort we put into making them work. I also know the quality of the audio can sometimes be a bit grating for people. I think it's a good place to start. I think the first season is a really good season, especially towards the end. We really picked things up. Each mystery, I think they got better and better as the season went on, and the players got really into it as the season went on. I think if you are a brand new listener and you are interested in getting to listen to us, I would recommend listening to the first episode of our second season, because we do have things that cross over from our first season. Obviously, we have characters and plot points and things that are important from the first season. But we, you know, when they come up, I have explained them. I made a point of making sure that if anything comes up important, that I explain what those things are. But also, the players know to explain things as well. So there have been great times where the characters in the second season have talked about things that happened in the first season or characters from the first season. So a good place to start is the first episode of the second season, because also the audio quality is better and it's a good place to pick up from. I think if you are to listen to the first season, I think there are a few good ones which are like good, like just really nailed it in terms of the way we were telling the stories. We have one of our last mysteries in the first season, episode 38. It's called Everbright, and it's the jumping off point for our final mystery of the first season. And it's just great in terms of the drama and everything. The stakes are really, really high. So it's a really fun mystery to get into. But apart from that, first episode of the second season would be great. First episode of the last mystery of the first season would be great. But I would also say episode 24, Death of a Dentist, is one of my favorite mysteries we did. It was a fey folk. We had a headless horseman. And it's really, really great. We had like a cult of witches and things in that mystery. So I love that as a storytelling point, and the players really got into that one as well. So Death of a Dentist is a great episode because it introduces a great mystery. Everbright is a great episode because it is high stakes, final mystery of the first season. And if you are a new starter and you don't want to touch the first season straight away, that's fine. Go to the episode 1 of season 2, which is called 1965.
Thank you for laying all that down. We're coming up to the end of our time. So I want to make sure before we end, we've kind of covered a pretty wide range of topics, but are there any other miscellaneous things that you want to make sure that we touch on before we wrap up?
Yeah, well, we have loads of, like you said, episodes and specials that go on which have nothing to do with the proper storyline. We love testing out new TTRPG systems. So we did a Christmas special our first year based on the 10 Candles TTRPG, which is a very bleak end of world game. We called it 10 Christmas Candles, and it was still bleak at the end of the world. And we did an Alien RPG, which I wrote a mystery and did the Alien RPG for a special for us, which I personally think was really great as well. Really, really worked. Kelly, who is part of the podcast, ran a Call of Cthulhu game, which is set in the world of the podcast, which is set in the 1920s, so a big step back. If you want to have a little bit more of a taste of lore and things, it does have things from the far history of the podcast as well, which should be fun to get into. And Kelly's a fantastic storyteller as well. She's such a great player. We also did a two-part series called Dead on Arrival, which is based on a one-page TTRPG that I myself wrote, which is inspired by, you know, Suicide Squad and like C-list supervillains getting like a chance to redeem themselves, but all before getting like butchered, doing like dangerous missions. And I was really lucky because I got the chance to play that with people from 5GMs in the Trench Coat. So we had Kim and Tanlin from 5GMs. And we also had Julianne and Kevin from the Wing Women podcast, which is another outstanding actual play podcast. And so I had these fantastic players come and play this just bonkers, chaotic, supervillain game. So we have all these ones that are already out. We also have a bunch which will be coming out in the next few months, probably. I've actually had to take a break from recording because I had a baby. So I had to take a little bit of a break just to give my family time with me before I got back into doing recording stuff.
Understandably so.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. But my players have taken that time to record their own game. So we have one run by Tom, which is going to be a Vason game, which is such a great game as well. If you haven't played Vason, it's a cool like Icelandic folklore horror game. And I think we have Jay, another player in the game, is running a Necronautilus game, which I have no idea what it is, but he seemed very enthusiastic about it. So I'm sure it'll be brilliant as well. So we have loads of extra stuff going on that we put together and lots of stuff I'm sure which will come up in the future. We have been talking to a lot of people to set things up. So yeah. Lots of exciting stuff to go on.
Well, fantastic. I, as we're wrapping up, I do want to thank you one more time for coming on and chatting with me. This has been an awesome conversation.
No, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been so great being able to talk to somebody about TTRPGs and just horror. And yeah, thank you so much. And thank you, anybody who is listening to the Thorn Files. Again, I always make sure I thank everybody in our ad read slots, but I love it when people read our, listen to our podcast. And if anyone, you know, hears me here and doesn't think, well, he doesn't sound like a complete prat, I can maybe listen to his actual play. Thank you as well to those people. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's been wonderful.
Absolutely. And as we send you off, can you remind us one more time where we can find your show?
Yes, the Thorn Files podcast is on whatever podcasting app you're listening to. So we are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you want to listen to podcasts, we are there. And you can find us on Instagram as well, where we do a lot of the announcing of episodes and any specials that we do at the Thorn Files _ podcast. We also have on there loads of our character art gets done. So we have character art for all of our characters. It's been done by at Doggle Gills, Faye, who's unbelievable character artist. They have done just stunning work. So if you want to come to our Instagram, we have a bunch of fun stuff on there. And yeah, we are on whatever podcasting apps you listen to.
Awesome. All of those links will be in the description. So thank you again for chatting with me. Thank you, all of you, for listening. And one more time, I'm Danger Dan Jers, the host and GM of D&D Dark. I've been speaking with Danny, the host and GM of The Thorn Files, and this has been Table Talk. And I hope you enjoyed what we brought to the table. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dan Jers, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Our guest this episode was Danny from the Thorn Files podcast. Links to his works can be found in the episode description. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, reach out to us at dndarkpodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song and outro was created by Jeremy Vellucci. Check out more of his works on Instagram at jeremyvellucci_wreckoftime. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time we have a guest take a seat at the table.
Hello and welcome to Super Stryford Regency Rangers, a comedy action adventure loosely based on Sentai and Sensibility by 9th Level Games and starring some of Stratford's most colorful creatures.
You may call me Adrian Alucard Depeche. If you know what my father did, it could be bad.
Looking matronly with her face hidden behind a fan stands the Kuchisake Ona. Doesn't everyone think she's beautiful?
My name is Sir Gordon Topham Hatt. Pleasure to meet you. I like to make stuff go boom.
My name is Richard Milo Renfield.
He's back.
No, he's just still like that. Oh, God.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I play Frederick the Loafer.
My God, is this the dude that was like in that one episode of D&D Dark?
It is the deepest cut of inside jokes that could be made. God.
Are you married, miss?
I am not married.
Kuchisake leans immediately to the group, just pulls a quick huddle. We need to get this trollop out of this fucking town.
We go fight?
I meet you at dawn tomorrow morning.
It's date.
I hope to find love like that someday.
She says that I hit her. I did not hit her. It's not bullshit. I did not.
And as you're walking, he just keeps following you.
Oh, God. I believe I have made an unfortunate ally.
On his hips are two pistols. On his back are two rifles. And on his chest, a triple barrel shotgun.
Oh, my God.
I will destroy all of you and destroy this town.
D&D Dark presents Super Stratford Regency Rangers, premiering Wednesday, May 27th, only on patreon.com/dnddarkpodcast.